This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
I'm going to talk like this a little bit now because we're in a very famous library. You know, Shakespeare once said, "There is a history in all men's lives." His own history was not the least of that. There are few better places to find out about the life and legacy of William Shakespeare than at the Folger Shakespeare Library, where he happened to be now in Washington, D.C. We're right in front of the vault of the library. I wouldn't call it exactly Al Capone's vault, but let's find out what's in here. We couldn't think of a better guide than our own literary detective, Paul Collins. Paul, nice to be with you.
Oh, it's good to be here.
And Gail Pastor is director of the Folger Shakespeare Library.
Welcome to the Folger.
Thank you very much. Am I talking quietly enough?
Well, we're not in the presence of readers, so I think we could shout if we wanted.
Okay, in the presence of a vault. And you have the keys to that vault,
I do.
Right?
I have them right here in my hand.
Okay.
So come along. They're kept in the dark. What you see in these two rooms is the largest collection of books printed in early modern England. And straight ahead of you, as you'll see, shelves where the books lie flat. And that is our collection of the Shakespeare First Folios, which is the largest collection in the world.
So are these the complete works of Shakespeare as we know them today?
Just about. There are 36 plays in here, and four are missing. And of those, Cardenio and Love's Labor One are still missing.
Macbeth.
Oh, my word.
As You Like It. Julius Caesar. These are plays that are folio-only plays.
We might have missed Life is But a Foolish Player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more, A Tale Told by an Idiot, often referred to as me in our family, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing if it weren't for these folios.
What would William Faulkner have done to title his books if it hadn't been for Macbeth?
There are many plays from back then that we only have the titles of. So it wouldn't have been a particularly unusual thing had these not been saved for those plays to have vanished. Shakespeare didn't exactly go out of his way to preserve his work. He was, you know, he was running a theater. He was a busy guy.
They all have numbers. This is copy number one.
This is the folio that Henry Folger described as the most precious book in the world. This specific copy.
You're just holding it there, Gail, like it's a loaf of bread or something.
I'm holding it carefully. I have washed my hands, and I'm going to cradle it in my arm, although technically I should be cradling it in a book cradle.
The engraving of the Bard's picture, Mr. William Shakespeare's Comedies, Histories, and Tragedies, published according to the true original copies in Old English spelling, London, 1623. Forgive a vulgar question here. Is there any way of putting a price tag on this?
On this book?
Yeah.
Yes, the way to do it would be to put it up for auction. But, of course, that's not going to happen. So the record-breaking valuation of a recent book that was a recent first folio that was in extremely good condition was over $6 million. So that gives you some sense of the value of this book.
When it first came out, it was about a pound, depending on how you got it. This particular copy, when they found it, it was in the hands of a guy named Coningsby Sibthorpe, and he had a fairly large library that he wasn't paying a lot of attention to. He had a book dealer come up from London. As they were looking around the property, there was an outbuilding. It was a granary. The dealer decided, well, we'll look out there and see if there's anything there. They found this. It was bound up with some twine, actually.
Oh, my word.
On top of an old shelf. And a servant on the property, when he was pulling this down, when the dealer was pulling this down, said, oh, that is no good. It's only old poetry.
Tough critic, huh?
Yeah.
Boy. Well, now there's another folio that you've taken out, too.
This is copy number 42.
Is that a latte stain on the cover?
You know, actually, one of the other ones that we have here
has... stain, probably, yeah.
One of the other ones that we have here has, I'm pretty certain, strawberry jam stain on it. Samuel Johnson, actually, his first folio, it's full of food stains. Mm-hmm. The next owner that had it after him said, I've repeatedly met with thin flakes of pie crust between its pages. So, but yeah.
He's a man who lived large. Yeah.
Yes.
I feel a sneeze coming down. I don't want it to cost $6 million. Hold on. I'm going to go all right. That terrible thought occurred to me. Is that a stain? No, that's actually where Mr. Simon sneezed.
Just another part of the history of the book.
What's wonderful, I mean, about seeing everything, is to remind ourselves these didn't begin as almost religious objects of reverence, but books that people read. Shakespeare, oh, I like him. He's funny.
The very first folio I looked at had all these like children's drawings in it, and I was really kind of shocked the first time I saw that. And since then, I've seen that in a number of folios.
My gosh, voila. those are children's drawings.
Yes, we're looking at.
Oh my word!
This is copy number 78, and a little girl has drawn on right underneath Hugh Holland's dedicatory poem.
Oh God!
Isn't that adorable?
She's pretty good.
Not bad.
Looks like a family dinner scene that she's.
Elizabeth Ockle, her book, 1729, and then she's drawn a little checkerboard.
And that's actually just about the exact right time for someone to be scribbling. It was not long after that that the critics started looking at the first folio. And the thing about the first folio is it's the only edition to be edited by people who knew Shakespeare, yeah, who had actually worked with him. It took about a century, but people eventually realized that makes it special.
I want to wind up with a truly Neanderthal question, but I think standing here inspired, moved, and amused in all the right ways, as I am by seeing these folios, it's something that would run through people's minds. Why have a vault? Why have special humidifier? Why go through all this trouble to keep these copies available for history when the words are important? We know the words. You can buy the words in a, you know, $12.95 paperback.
Well, it seems to me that what you get when you open up a copy of the folio and you find a scribble by Elizabeth Ockle writing in her book, that you have a direct connection with readers. And our vault is full of books with marginalia, notations, responses to reading. Those are the things that make each of these objects, particularly in the hand press period, mm-hmm, unique. And you get a sense of connection to prior readers, prior minds, that the digital copy will not provide.
And that's something that I often think of, that, you know, as more and more books move to a digital format, I love working in stuff in a digital format. For any researcher, it's a tremendous boon. But I'm also always keenly aware that these books have held up for the better part of 400 years now.
And digital media may not.
I mean, over the course of hundreds of years, nobody's really sure how that's going to hold up. But yeah, we know that these will.
Well, thank you both very much for letting us into the vault. Paul Collins is our literary detective, author of The Book of William, How Shakespeare's First Folio Conquered the World, and Gail Pastor, who's director of the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. Can we get out of this vault?
I have the key.